I'm excited about what we find in this chapter. And I guess the reason I'm excited is because it's something that I need in my life, and I think it's something that we need as a church. And so I hope that this evening will not be an evening of sitting here with a vacant stare, but an evening of thinking in a way that's meaningful about what Jesus says to us. So what I'd like to do this evening a few times, it's a bit unconventional, is I'd like to have us meet again in our small groups. You know, anywhere from 3 to 5 people is fine. Or maybe if you like to especially talk a lot, maybe you'll want to just meet with one other person. And I'll have a question or two that I'll give you, and then you can talk about that for a few minutes, and then we'll kind of see what you came up with and use that as a bit of... use that kind of to start our discussion. So I've divided the chapter into basically 3 sections, verses 1 through 10, 11 through 14, and 15 through 21. And so I think we're going to spend a bit of time in our small groups on each of these sections. Also, in your group, just quickly appoint someone to kind of be your spokesperson. That way, hopefully, you won't be sitting there and wondering if Ned or whoever over here will be saying, or if you should be saying your profound point. All right. So, for this first section, verses 1 through 10, I want you to think about what are the points that Paul is trying to make. So he wasn't just writing this because he was bored. He actually wanted to say something. And so in your little group, try to figure out what was the gist, what was the main thing that he was trying to communicate. I'll give you maybe 2 or 3 minutes. All right, so what did you come up with?
Titus?
Okay. Salvation is not through the Jewish law. Paul? Okay, go ahead, Brian.
Possibly, like Paul was saying, it's a bit of a journey for Paul. It almost seems like he comes fearing that his race might be run in vain, and then through his meeting, it's confirmed to him that he is indeed called the Gentiles.
Okay, so we have several elements there. We have the element of Paul's revelation is not from man, but yet he's getting this kind of confirmation from some of the others that he's on the right track. All right, what are the comments? Okay, Nathan.
It was important that it was not from man, because then it also was sensed when there were those who were trying to take away from the liberty of Christ.
Okay. Right.
Not take away from what you said about confirmation, but by having that revelation from God of what the gospel really was, and rather relying solely on people, rely solely on people to bring that out.
Mm-hmm. And since it was from God, it was worth defending, and it was defendable. Okay. All right. Any other comments?
Question: why was Titus held to be circumcised?
Okay. Bull.
Isn't it saying, but neither Titus was with me was compelled. He was not either. Didn't he?
Okay. I think we would read elsewhere that Timothy was, and so... Okay. All right. Gary. Okay. All right. Well, let's keep moving. Let's tackle the next section, verses 11 through 14. And he gives a little story here. And so just think through a little bit. What was the purpose of this story, and how does this strengthen the overall argument or whatever's going on here? So I'll give you between 1 and 2 minutes on this one. All right, well, this is kind of a fun little story. What did you gain from this story, or what do you think, what was Paul's point here? Nathan?
Well, it seems to bring out in a very practical way how easy it is to be swayed when we look to those around us. And it says, Peter, here, by those of the circumstances think, he went separate himself, and Barnabas is persuaded too.
So it's kind of interesting. It wasn't necessarily because Peter's theology was off, but he got his focus wrong. Okay?
Part of this is also to authenticate his own authority and apostleship. Paul does that repeatedly in different ways.
Right. And, right, so if he can rebuke, you know, the head honchos, then he must be a head honcho himself. And, I think apparently Paul as a messenger, apparently was being criticized, and also apparently his message was being criticized. And, this is kind of going back to the first section now, but you know, what happens when you attack the messenger? Well, the message starts to lose credibility. Or what happens if you attack the message? Well, the messenger starts to lose credibility. So, you know, if Paul has both of these problems, as it were, you know, he needs to get onto some better ground. Okay, well, moving into the next section.
May I make a comment?
Sure. Okay. Paul?
Don't you think that Paul saw the seriousness of what was being under attack? Even more than defending his being an apostle, he saw the gospel. That was the symbol. That was what he was dying for, living in. He knew if the Judaizers would have their day, that would do tremendous harm to the gospel of Christ.
Mm-hmm. Dead? Okay. And it wasn't just that Peter and Paul had relational issues or something. It was there was something serious going on with the broader ramifications. Yeah.
John Mark, his judgment of John Mark was
Yes, in fact, perhaps they were, well, not especially human, but also, like you said, also human. And I think that leads in well into the next section. Verses 15 through 21, and this could have maybe been subdivided, but I think we'll leave it intact as a section. And there's a lot of good stuff in here. So in your small groups this time, you can either look for what is the main point or the overarching theme, or you can look for the thing that means the most to you or stands out to you as something that we need the most. So I'll give you between 2 and 3 minutes for this one as well. All right, so now that you got this one thoroughly worked out, what are the things that especially stood out to you? Nathan? Okay, thank you. All right, so I think what Nathan is saying here, and this is one of the big things I got from this, I guess, was we have people coming and saying, Jesus is fine. He's good, in fact, but you need Jesus plus something else. And I think this has always been a tendency for the church historically, has been to have Jesus and then, well, plus something else. And pretty soon, sometimes even, I think we could probably all point to a few examples where we've seen where Jesus seems to kind of fade away and we still kind of got the plus here. And so that, I think, is a kind of one of the major themes here. Now, I say that not to sabotage the discussion here, but I think this is a point that is too big and important to miss. So, well, I should leave it open. What were some of the other things that that you thought of as you read through this passage? Okay, all right, so we start out in the Christian life, right? We start out with just Jesus, right? Because we had all our sin, we come to him, and Jesus is the one who died for us. He cleanses us, he gives us new life. And so could I paraphrase what you said, David, to say that as we continue walking forward, Jesus still needs to be the main focus? That doesn't change. And where Jesus becomes not the main focus, whether it's what I can do or what I can't do, that we have problems. Any more discussion on that? Ali? Okay. All right, Ali.
I would like to see it or maybe take it this way, like David said, that Jesus with us cooperating equals.
Okay. Okay.
Equals a life that will be for God.
Okay.
Our cooperation with Jesus equals.
Okay. All right. Lauren, did you have something? Mm-hmm.
It's helpful in interacting with each other too, by having a focus.
Mm-hmm. And there again, I might ask, is the focus on? I want to say this correctly, but is it on the manifestations of Jesus in our life, or is our focus still on Jesus? And then as we focus on Him, He brings the manifestations. And I don't want to make a false distinction here, but I'm concerned about what's our first thing and what's our second thing. Paul.
That would be what Jesus said, that without me, you can do nothing. I mean, we talked a little bit about faith and works here in our group, and I think I'm afraid sometimes we don't understand what faith is. It's a relationship with the Lord that gives us the grace to grow in Him and to live. It's that focus, but even more than the focus, it's the life.
Uh-huh. Well,
this is a funny trailer, it's not clear on it, but there's the works of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit, and the manifestation of the Spirit. And it's very difficult to manufacture the fruit of the Spirit. And I think that's a part of this life of Christ that is available for us. We often fall short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a valuable self-check. When we're wondering, are we actually walking in Christ, we can look over the fruits of the Spirit and see, you know, those are hard to fake. I mean, we can fake them externally, but we know better inside, right? So that's I think, an excellent way to check to see, is our focus on Jesus? So who are in this passage, who are the people, who are the players, if I may use the terminology, that are referred to here?
Jews and Gentiles.
Jews and Gentiles, all right. Even more broadly. What's it?
Apostles.
Apostles, okay. All right, so perhaps the question was too basic, but what I'm reaching for is the fact that there's man and there's God. And so as you look at this passage, who do you see as being the one who initiates whatever good things are happening here? Okay, Jesus. All right, so we know the right answer, but sometimes it's easy for me to think, I am the one who is primarily reaching towards God, and He is perhaps doing something else or busy with other more important things. But if I come knocking, then he's, you know, he'll be open to what I have to say, or he'll help me out or whatever. And I think that's simply fairly wrongheaded, and that Jesus took the initiative to come for us, and he still takes the initiative. Of course, there is the response. I'm not minimizing that we respond to Jesus, but I think it's important. I often forget how that actually is. So how does our holiness compare with God's? It talks in here about justification. How does our holiness compare to God's holiness? Nathan?
There is a scripture, I think it's the word that's says our righteousness is its filthy rag. So I'm not sure what you're getting at exactly, but our own holiness, I think you can say it the same way, as filthy rags, not just the holiness that God has placed on us, that's obviously something different.
Okay. But what we bring of ourselves to the table is not really worth looking at, is it? And Gary? Okay. All right, so I suppose most of us could agree that there's perhaps several different ways in which we bring, how shall we say, several different righteousnesses, if you will. The one is basically where we attempt to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, and the other kind is where the life of Christ actually, it works itself out in our lives, and it's something that, like Gary said, is very pleasing to God. And perhaps there's several things to guard against here. One maybe being that we think, perhaps we think that we're almost, we wouldn't ever say this, by the way, but we're almost as good as God. But we just need. And we're almost perfect, but we just need a little bit of touch-up. And God basically accepts us based on, you know, what we bring. And perhaps the other view, okay, now I lost my train of thought. All right, well, let's go with that. Is that, we can, obviously the way I stated it, we know that's not what we're after here. What is the correct view? Okay. Brian?
You talked about two righteousnesses, one of ourselves, or good works, and one being the righteousness of Christ. And those aren't always easy to differentiate between. But perhaps a self-check for it, or a way of differentiating, is thinking about who's receiving glory. And if in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says that men will see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven, obviously those are look good, then when I'm doing well, I will look good. When I do poorly,
Okay. All right, let's look at the very last verse. I do not nullify the grace of God, for if justification were through the law, then Christ died for no purpose. So how could we nullify the grace of God? No one here intends to do that, but how might we do that without perhaps even trying to? Nathan? Right.
Probably on the other side, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? The idea that I'm saved, now I can live like I want to, and grace will take care of it, I think multiplies the grace.
Okay. So there might be a nullification in where you assume that it's by your own efforts that you're right with God. That's one way of nullifying it. The other one is by sinning intentionally, and that also, Paul clearly says in this passage, that is not the point of what he is saying here. So, all right, well, I think we have enough things to figure out to still be able to discuss something next week. So thank you for your discussion. I'll turn the time back to Marvin.